Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Lanides, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. On the episode today, I have the pleasure of speaking with King Mo, Muhammad Lawal. I'm so glad that Mo was able to find some time to be able to be on the show. It was great connecting with him. I've actually never spoken with him before. My co-host Josh has had the pleasure of interviewing him in the past, but this was my turn. So I had a great time chatting with him. We talk about his formative years, his love of pro wrestling. I actually didn't know that he had almost gone into pro wrestling before he went into MMA. So that was pretty cool to talk about that. We get to chat about AEW, but of course we really focus in on his time in Strikeforce, talk about him winning the Strikeforce light heavyweight title against Gegard Mousasi. We talk about his win over Lorenz Larkin and then what happened subsequently as far as the drug test and being released by Zuffa and all that stuff. So we delve into a ton of stuff. It's a lot of fun. Mo's a great interview. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right. On the line with us, we have the man, the myth, the legend, King Mo, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, Ryzen heavyweight Grand Prix winner, very, very decorated amateur wrestler as well. Mo, thanks for taking the time to join us on Inside the Hexagon.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's great to connect. I want to talk a little bit about your background. I mentioned, very, very decorated amateur wrestler. You competed extensively as an amateur, won all kinds of titles, narrowly missed the Olympics, but at the same time, huge, huge pro wrestling fan growing up. Eventually you ended up in the Real Pro Wrestling League, RPW. Daniel Cormier was in there, Patrick Cummings, some others. It was basically the premise was that this was amateur wrestling, but kind of, done professionally. Y'all were paid and, was there characters? Like what was your experience like with RPW?
It was cool, man. There were no characters. We were just ourselves pretty much.
Okay.
We just went out there and just had a good time because it wasn't real wrestling. It was just a TV show.
Okay. I think it lasted for a couple seasons, so it wasn't, hugely successful without the, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. I need my entrances. I need my, I need my costumes. I need my flippy flops and all that stuff. So I don't know how, obviously the premise was interesting, but didn't pan out. But so you decide after you didn't make it to the Olympics, apparently you'd gotten an offer from WWE to do some developmental, and we'll talk a little bit more about pro wrestling later, but you decided to go into MMA and you really made a name for yourself in Japan. Your entrances, your antics, the girls coming out with you, the umbrella, all that stuff, the crown, the big old, the gold, everything. You were a huge, huge superstar in Japan. How did you, that's where you made your debut. How did you get hooked up with Japan and just what did you love it there? Like, what was your experience like fighting in Japan?
With Japan, I guess Ryzen had a fight that fell through. And they reached out to Brian Parsons to see if there's anybody that could fill in on short notice. And Ryan threw my name in on the mix. And that's when, it took off. Went to Japan, fought Travis View, won.
Yeah.
I won that fight by knockout in the first round. And, I'm going to be real with you. Japan, I love Japan. Like, Tokyo especially. It was a great experience out there. A different culture, but I like it out there, man. A very respectful crowd. I like their customs, man. I like Japan. It was an enjoyable time out there when I'd go.
Okay. And obviously you've fought there a bunch of times over the years. And just for clarification, you were with Sengoku at that time. Ryzen wasn't around yet, but yeah, same group basically.
Yeah, so, Sengoku, yeah.
So you really, I was working in MMA at that time as a publicist. I remember hearing about that fight. It was like, hey, this guy, man, View is a really tough guy. I'm like, this guy's legit. And obviously I saw the crown and I'm thinking, all right, this guy, he's got to be a wrestling fan because it's just the entrance, everything. So I wish we could have seen you fight in Pride. Obviously you would have been custom made for Pride, but missed that by a little bit, but yeah, it's still pretty awesome. So then you make your American MMA debut. You beat the Smashing Machine, Mark Kerr, who was a big time pioneer, big time name. Obviously he was past his prime, but it's still nice to have that notch on your record. And so, that you turn some heads with that, you end up signing with Strikeforce. So let's talk about you beating Gegard Mousasi for the belt. Going into that fight, you seem to have a very wrestling heavy strategy, and which was smart, because Musasi, if he has an Achilles heel, it's always been his wrestling is can be easily taken down. And you did that for 5 rounds and really put a beating on him. So was that your plan going into that? Was it, hey man, if the knockout comes, great, but I'm going to do what I have to do to win the belt.
Be real with you. I didn't know anything. Musashi was my sixth fight, and I think I've been fighting for like maybe 2 years. Is that?
Yep.
So like I've been fast-tracked. I wasn't went to that fight kind of injured, like my knee was messed up. But I just went out there, I was like, you know what, I just gotta beat this kid. You know, he's young. If I put pressure on him, I think he can break. He's never faced a high-level wrestler before, and I was his first introduction to a high-level wrestler.
I think it actually ended up being kind of good for him, because you could see in subsequent fights with him that his takedown defense was better, and then he'd be really busy from the bottom if he did get taken down. In that fight, he just didn't seem to know what to do with you, and obviously it was a big signature moment for you, and you got to add. I still think the Strikeforce belts, the title belts, I think they're the best belts in MMA. I mean, I really like the Ryzen belts as well. I like the gold, but those Strikeforce belts were gorgeous. And so adding that to your crown and your medallion, that must have been a pretty cool experience. Was it a big deal for you winning the belt like that, especially so early in your career?
Yeah, it was a big deal. Just winning anything. I didn't really know what to expect. I was an MMA fan. I liked fighting. But I didn't know what to expect. I went out there, won the belt, and, I went out there and did my thing.
Well, it worked out for you. But so then, you know, unfortunately, and this was, I don't even know if you're aware of this, but the light heavyweight division of Strikeforce, almost nobody, I think Bobby Southworth, he won the belt first. And I think he defended once. I don't think any other light heavyweight champion of Strikeforce actually defended the belt. They all lost the belt. Yeah. Right. So you ended up losing the belt to Fei Zhao on your next one, but then you knocked out Hodger Gracie, really highlight real fashion. That was a pretty brutal one. And then it led to the bout with Lorenz Larkin, and you pretty much dominated the fight. You ended it with some brutal right hands to the face. We actually on the podcast just covered that fight, and we were, you know, discussing it. You were obviously upset with referee Kim Winslow. It seemed like she took too long to stop the bout, and you were still talking to her about it respectfully, but you were still talking to her about it, even as she was getting to raise your hand in victory. What do you remember about that fight? What do you remember about, you know, how you felt afterwards and, you know, being upset and all that? Give it, kind of take us back there and let us know how you felt at that time.
Well, I didn't know much about Kim Winslow. I just know that I remember one time she cornered, she was the referee for the Jan Finney fight when Jan Finney fought Cyborg. And
oh God. Yeah. That was my God. Yeah. She let her. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that, but that was brutal. She,
yeah. And that stuck with me. And, you know, I kind of said something to her. Like, I was like, you know, kind of waited too long. I don't even know what her background or her experience level was in MMA. I don't know, you know, her with combat sports, but, you know, I guess she was a pioneer. But
yeah, being a female referee, yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work out for Lorenz that night. I agree with you. I felt like she let it go. She let it go too long, and obviously he paid the price. But he had mentioned, again, don't know if you're aware of this, but he'd been asked about dropping down a weight, because you could see him even at that point. He looked chubby for 205. It looked like he could easily cut down, and you were his last fight at 205. He dropped down to 185, and eventually
he started off at heavyweight.
And he'd cut all the way down, and then he's fought at 170. You know, I think he's back up at middleweight now, but he's gone back and forth. And so I think when he had been asked about it, he said he had never had anybody like fought anybody where it made him feel like, oh man, I'm too small for this division. And clearly you changed his mind on that, you know, afterwards, but unfortunately, you know, after the fight, you have the positive test, you get the suspension. Later, you know, you had some issues with Pat Lundvall, one of the Nevada State Athletic Commissioners. Zuffa ends up releasing you, end up going over to Bellator. I believe you've maintained your innocence. You blamed a tainted supplement, and there's been no other issues since that time, but Strikeforce ends up closing up shop about 6 months after you were released. Looking back now, you had, you know, 5 or 6 fights with Strikeforce. Looking back now, and just because this is a podcast about Strikeforce, I think you'll tell me the truth anyways, but you know, how important was Strikeforce to your career? Do you look back on that as, you know, hey, really important time. You had a you know, fun. That's where you really made your name. Like, what are your feelings on Strikeforce looking back all these years later?
I enjoyed my time with Strikeforce. It helped me grow as a person, as a fighter, as a person. I met a lot of cool people. I don't know, I experienced a lot, man, because Strikeforce helped me become who I am today. So, you know, Scott Coker is the man.
Yep.
You know, Rich Chu, you know, Carrie, the whole staff. Carrie Ann, the whole staff is stellar. You know?
Shout out to Carrie Ann. She's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously the relationship has continued with Scott. And you're one of those guys. I mean, you technically fought under Zuffa's banner because they were, you know, Strikeforce was purchased by them, but you've never stepped foot in the UFC. Like, was that on purpose? Are you just one of those guys that, you know, you don't like, you want to fight for the underdog, so to speak, or what's the reason why I never go into the UFC?
I don't know. I just got offered to do a Bellator. I don't know. I never really care about the organizations. I just care about just fighting and paid and having a good time.
There you go. Okay. Well, it's worked out for you, obviously. But you, of course, over the, you know, the next several years after going over to Bellator, then you continue to fight in Ryzen over in Japan. You have some huge fights, two fights with Rampage, you know, Phil Davis, Mirko Krokop, Czech Congo, you know, just obviously tons of big fights. Since then you've retired, focused on coaching and training fighters at American Top Team. You're still one of the top gyms in the world. I think it just got named 2021's gym of the year. And so That's obviously a big part of what you're doing. But I remember on commentary, Pat Miletich during the Lorenzo Larkin fight had talked about how cerebral you are as a fighter, that you had a real knack for being able to dissect your opponents and just look at fights and have insight. How much has that played into your training and your coaching? Do you enjoy coaching and training more than you did fighting? Talk about what you're doing today as far as helping today's fighters get ready for their fights.
Anything I do at the moment, I enjoy that. I enjoy more than I did in the past because I'm all about progression. Things get more fun as time goes on. So I love fighting, but I love coaching more now because that's what I'm doing.
So who are the main people, you know, guys or gals, who are the main people that you're training at this point that, you know, hey, you're cornering them. You're, you know, a big part of getting them ready for their fights. Like, who are the main fighters that you're working with?
Brandon Hughes, Matt Hughes' son.
Okay. I didn't know he was fighting.
Yeah, he's an amateur. Johnny Eblen, Jarzinho Rosenstruck, okay. Jada Verbeek, Mike Lombardo. I'm helping Austin Vandefort with this fight versus Musasi coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Saeed Salma, Marcus Pereira. I mean, I have a lot of fighters that come to me. I don't always corner all of them, but I just work with quite a few. So, you know, it just varies.
Okay. And I'm sure that you enjoy that, you know, that variety of being able to work with all these different fighters. That must be a lot of fun. Keep it fresh, keep it new.
Yeah, keep it fresh, new, and it's challenging because with me, I like to customize what my fighters need to do. I don't go out there just throw all my fighters in one big box. I have their own individual circle for them to work in. And work and learn from.
Okay. I got to ask about the, going back into your fighting days, I got to ask about Krokop. Fedor is probably my favorite of all time, but Krokop is a close second. You know, him being obviously just pretty much a god in Japan. How much did it mean to you, even though, again, he was not, you know, not in his prime, but being able to take on a guy like Krokop, what did that mean to you? How did you feel about the fight? Obviously didn't go the way that you wanted it to, but how'd you feel about that?
Well, I took the fight on like literally 6 days notice, something like that, because I fought in Ireland. So I fought Ishii in Ireland. And then they offered me the fight after I beat Ishii, they offered me the fight and said, hey, do you want to fight Krokop? And I was like, yeah, when? It's like in 9 days, something like that. So I flew back to America. Got the visa and the food Japan and fought him.
Okay.
So I waited. He was just so big, man. Like, I was doing good. I was winning, but he was just so big and he caught me. I waited at 210. He waited at like 250.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, heavyweight was not. I mean, you would walk around at around what, 215, 220 for the most part when you were fighting?
210.
Oh, 210. You walked around at 210. Okay.
If that, yeah, because like you know, Strike Force, when I, even in Bellator, when I go, fight week, I'd be on weight.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't have to really even cut anything very much.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so yeah, obviously he was always a big, you know, those like massive thighs and thick legs, and he was always been a really big boy. So yeah, he must have had a massive weight advantage on you. So, but kudos to you for taking that. And hey, you know, not there's only a handful of people out there can say that they fought Crow Cop in the entire world. So, you know, that's a big deal. But we got just a few more questions here. You know, as we mentioned, you've obviously been a big pro wrestling fan your whole life. You've dabbled in the business over the years. As I mentioned earlier, you had gotten a developmental contract offer from WWE, but decided to go the MMA route in the mid 2000s. You had a couple runs with TNA and Impact. You've made, you know, an independent appearance or two, you know, here and there. Then you've been involved with MLW for the last couple of years, continuing to have a match. I think you had a match with Low Ki. Was that last year or 2020 when you had the Low Ki match?
I think it's 2020. I think I'm not sure. Okay.
So, but you're still involved with MLW. And then recently Dan Lambert of America Talk Team stated that you'd been a big help in getting Junior Dos Santos ready for his in-ring debut in AEW. You know, you also hinted that, hey, we might see King Mo enter the Forbidden Door and maybe make an appearance in AEW. And I'm not asking you to give anything away, but talking about, you know, being a crossover star, both MMA and pro wrestling, what, you know, you plan to continue to be involved in pro wrestling? You ever see an extended run as an in-ring combatant? Like, give us your thoughts on, you know, your career in pro wrestling.
Well, my career in pro, I'm just doing it for fun, really. Like, I'm not trying to go anywhere with it. My body's sore. I'm hurt. Like, I enjoy doing it, but I'm not going to take it too far. You know, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy watching it, but I leave it for the Young Bucks. I'm literally the Young Bucks.
I'm like the actual Young Bucks.
Nah, not the two sweet Young Bucks, but the younger guys.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the obviously they had the whole angle with ATT, and I was surprised that I didn't see King Mo there, to be honest with you. I mean, especially knowing your love of pro wrestling and your involvement, was that ever an opportunity?
Well, nah, because I was still in the MLW contract. Okay. So like, it would, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Dan was just doing MLW and AEW. I think he just does it because Dan don't gotta get paid. Dan's Dan. You know, he gets what he wants.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's a massive pro wrestling fan. I saw he, you know, cut a promo from his, I guess his office, and he's got all those belts lined up. I mean, obviously he's clearly an old school pro wrestling fan. So, but just I would love to see King Mo in AEW, even if it's just for like an angle or something like that. I would love to see King Mo in AEW. I think he'd be a natural fit there. So it'd be.
Man, AEW. I love what I see in pro wrestling right now with the crossovers. The Forbidden Door,
yeah.
AEW, Ring of Honor, which was now defunct, are coming back now.
Yeah, yeah. They announced they got their main event for their super card for their relaunch. So yeah, they're coming back.
So then you got Impact, you got New Japan, you got PWG.
Yep.
Yeah. So you know, Future Stars of Wrestling. I like the independent scene. Strong.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on. I think. I know Phil Baroni was doing some stuff with Future Stars of Wrestling, if I remember correctly. And he's another guy that would be a natural fit for pro wrestling. So,
yeah.
So yeah, well, hopefully we'll see more of you in pro wrestling. So listeners can find you on Instagram and Twitter at KingMoFH. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? You know, I know obviously deeply involved with coaching at ATT and still involved with MLW. Is there anything else that you want to mention as far as you being involved with?
No, man, I'm just chilling, man. You know, I'm low key behind the scenes, man.
Okay, cool, no problem. All right, well, my last question: if someone has never got to see you fight live, and it doesn't matter if it's Ryzen, Bellator, Strikeforce, wherever, what's the one fight that stands out in your mind that says, "All right, this is who I was as a fighter"? Which fight would you direct somebody to know that, hey, this is who I was as a fighter?
That's a good question. I don't know because, we're all fighters and we all have to fight different battles in different ways. But as a fighter in the cage, like, I guess you look at them all because, like, you know, like, I wasn't 100% in all of them. I wasn't 100% in some of them, you know what I'm saying? I was good, I was bad, but one thing I did is I tried, gave my all, like we all do. So, you know, I can't give one specific fight because, you know, I was going through different things at different times, but I can tell you this, in all my fights, I tried my best.
Okay. Fair enough. I'll say from my side, I really like the Hodger Gracie fight because I feel like you showed kind of a well-rounded skill set, and then just the knockout was just brutal. Oh, yeah. So I really enjoyed the Hodger Gracie, but I always liked watching you fight. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it was always fun for me. If King Mo was on the card, I knew we were going to get at least one good fight, you know? So I always enjoyed that. One more thing before I let you go, though. I did want to ask about your health. Obviously, but after the Larkin fight, you had a real staph infection scare. And I remember reading a quote. You'd been interviewed by Percy Crawford, who I have a lot of respect for. And you talked about basically you had an 8-pack at the time, but you could see your hip bone because of, you know, the eating away and all that. And I guess you've recently had a partial hip replacement and that sort of thing, but how's your health today? How are you feeling? And obviously if you're training guys, you got to be able to get physical to an extent, but yeah. How's your health at this point?
Health is pretty good. I have some small issues like with my thyroid, stuff like that, but like, you know, it's hyperactive. But other than that, like I'm in shape, I'm lean, but you know, I'm having a hard time keeping my weight up because my metabolism runs so fast. But other than that, I'm good.
Well, I don't feel sorry for you about the metabolism part. I would gladly trade you for that. But anyways. All right. Well, Mo, I appreciate you taking the time to be on with us today. Thank you. And yeah, best of luck. And we hope to see you, you know, hope to see you on maybe an ADW screen or something along those lines pretty soon. But regardless, appreciate your time.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, I want to thank my very special guest, King Mo, for taking the time to be on Inside the Hexagon with me. I really enjoyed connecting with him. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. We had a lot of fun talking about, I mean, I just probably the most enjoyable part of it for me was talking about wrestling with him. But it was really cool to hear him talk about his preparation for fights and just, you know, it's just his career, just everything. And what you know, it sounds like he's in a really good place and he's really found a niche for himself, you know, in his post fighting career. It's really great to hear that he's taken all this time and really working with, you know, a lot of these younger fighters. And I didn't know that Matt Hughes' son was competing in as an amateur. And that's pretty cool that Mo's working with him. So pretty awesome stuff. Really glad that we were able to connect. But coming up in our next episode, we are going to be covering Rousey versus Tate, or I guess it's Tate versus Rousey, actually. It took place in March of 2012, and obviously this was a massive, massive fight for Strikeforce, the big, you know, the really big time feud between Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey. They're still not fans of each other. Here we are 10 years later, and they probably would still go at it if they had the opportunity. But they battle for the women's bantamweight title. Also on this card, we see Josh Thompson return to take on KJ Nunes. Kazuo Misaki, longtime Pride fighter, takes on Paul Daly. And then Jacare, the former middleweight champ, is back, and he takes on Bristol Marunde on the main card. So I'm looking forward to this one. Scott Smith dropped all the way down to the preliminary card. Sarah Kaufman, who just probably was just ready to murder somebody because she was supposed to get the title shot against Tate, and instead she got bumped, and instead we got Ronda Rousey in there. So this is kind of an interesting dynamic, and I'm looking forward to digging into the research there. After that, we've got some other cool stuff that's on the horizon. The Barnett versus Cormier card, where they finally, you know, complete the heavyweight Grand Prix. And then I'm really excited to announce that Gilbert Melendez and Josh Thompson have agreed to come on together, and we're going to be talking about their trilogy of fights, one of the most famous trilogies in MMA history, definitely the most famous trilogy in Strikeforce history, might be the only trilogy in Strikeforce history, but I'm really, really excited that they've both agreed to come on, and they're looking forward to digging into their fights, and I'm looking forward to that as well. Nate Marquardt, former Strikeforce welterweight champion, has agreed to come on, and then Ryan Couture, son of Randy the Natural Couture. Ryan competed several times in Strikeforce, including on this Tate versus Rousey card on the undercard, so he's going to be coming on as well. So we've got some really cool stuff. I only have a handful of Strikeforce cards left. There's actually only five left, including Tate versus Rousey, so yeah, there's not a ton left to get to. We're getting to the end of our show. Got just a couple months left, but I'm excited to finish this thing strong, and I appreciate you going on the ride with us. If you want to reach me, you can hit me up at phil@insidethehexagon.com. Would love to hear from you. But with that, we're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. We hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy, and we will see you soon.
should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.